You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. I hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving with the family and caught up on your rest or your homework, depending on what was your priority. I know I have a paper due on coding, programming, that I was working on. I had to read a book, and I had planned to do it over the Thanksgiving holiday. I actually did it mostly Saturday and Sunday because I got caught up in shopping, and I'm not finished with my shopping because they is people buy things online. Now, I probably won't, but I'm looking for the good deal. Actually, I want to buy some furniture, and I think I'd be better served buying it sometime next year, early next year. So consumers are spending their money. And remember, consumers are roughly 70% of the gross national product. And it looked like a good holiday, although the shopping season is shorter now because Thanksgiving was later. People were coming out, stores were crowded, and I'm sure many are buying online and will have, in a week or maybe even less, a good readout as to how does that compare to the previous year. And it is a concern, but I'm not seeing any recession. Now, we do have the Democrats are trying to talk up, put this economy in a recession. That's what I call negative vibes. I don't like negative vibes. They shouldn't be doing that. But they really hate Trump. They hate him so much, I think many of them wish the economy would go in a serious recession, if not depression, just to defeat Trump. Well, I don't think they're going to get their wish. But it does influence, to a certain extent, people that pay attention to these people. I think they're hysterical. Most of them are Trump haters. Now, I don't either love or hate Trump. He's not my first choice, never was, to be president of the United States. My first choice is actually his vice president, which got my attention because I didn't take Trump that seriously. But when he picked Mike Pence, I stood up at attention and said, what's going on here? Now, I think Trump is going to be reelected. I've said that last Thursday and Friday. What's happening? Well, the president is off to the, I believe it's the 70th anniversary of NATO. Now, I support Trump in demanding, and he's been somewhat successful, but I really think he has to keep the pressure up on the NATO countries that are not spending at least 2% of their gross national product on defending their own countries. And yes, he's made some progress, but there's a lot of catching up to do. And the United States, they rely on the United States to be primarily the nuclear shield, especially when the Soviet Union reigned. But Russia is still Russia. Now, it's a fraction. What most people don't understand is Russia's population is declining. It's about half the United States. And the economy is just not that big. What they have is not a lot of natural resources, oil, natural gas. And their biggest market is Europe. And Germany, for example, is one of the countries that is importing a lot of natural gas. Now, the United States also has huge reserves of natural gas. And we are now a net exporter of energy. But exporting natural gas the liquid form of it, liquid natural gas. Some countries are starting that, and I think that will be a growing and expanding market, and we should be very quickly a competitor of Russia. So keep that in mind. President Trump is on his way to Europe, and he's told the Congress, I'm not going to testify. In other words, go pound sand is a short way to say it, and I think that's the appropriate response to the House. They have not shown any common sense because they don't have anything. They never should have pursued this, and they've more or less put themselves in a nice box, thinking that they could, this would be the way to make Donald Trump illegitimate. It hasn't worked at all. I think, quite frankly, right now, he has more support, definitely from the Republicans. Now, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I would call myself an independent, and I don't really lean either way. I don't vote for big government parties, and that's the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. For many years, I was a conservative, classical liberal, I would call my philosophy. But what did I see, especially starting with George W. Bush, and really continuing today, when Republicans were in office and controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they went on a spending spree, and that's exactly what's happening now. One of the reasons, though, the deficit is so big is that tax cut. Now, they were expecting that that tax cut would result in growth rates exceeding 3%, but it really hasn't happened. It happened for 1 year, and that's to be expected, but it hasn't happened because people look at the debt that the United States government has incurred, and where you have every single year a deficit now over $900 billion and going to $1,000 billion next year, that just increases the debt. The debt today is over $23 trillion. Think of it as $23,000 billion. That's a big number, folks. That is bigger than the total output for all goods and services, final goods and services in the United States, the gross domestic product. It used to be called GNP. I won't explain that, but I was used to calling it, when I went to grad school and when I was in college, they called it GNP. Now it's gross domestic product. It's real gross domestic product. And it's somewhere in the $21 trillion, maybe $22 trillion when you're talking real GDP. And that's a big number. And it's only getting worse. It looks like, as far as you can see, the deficits will be in a neighborhood of $1 trillion or more for several years. So Trump, consistent with George Bush and this, has been running up massive budgetary deficit every year. Now, let's be fair. It's really the House of Representatives that is the place that money bills, and that's budgetary and tax bills, originate. Now, the Senate has to agree in the sense that they have to agree as to the language of what the budget should be in terms of appropriations, as well as what the taxes will be. And so the president could propose, for example, a balanced budget. Now, he didn't, but he could propose a balanced budget, but they would be laughed at in Congress, not only by Democrats, by Republicans, too. And see, ladies and gentlemen, that's the problem. There is no sense of urgency. They truly believe they can kick the can down the road. And now that interest rates are very low, if you listen to President Trump, he would like to follow Europe and make them negative. I don't think that's a good idea, but I understand where he's coming from. I'm against financial repression. Now, what's that? Who gets really hurt when the government controls or manipulates the federal funds rate? It's savers. The biggest one of the biggest problems in the United States is the American people simply are not saving enough money. But keep in mind, one of the big problems is they have to pay payroll taxes. And despite some initial indications that they were going to do something about that, the U.S. Treasury Department of Treasury didn't do anything. The biggest tax that most people pay are payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, and disability. That's if they're working. Obviously, if they're not working, they're not paying any income taxes and no payroll taxes. Usually, if they're in that situation, what they're getting is welfare, called income security payments. And what's interesting, I always publish my notes for the show because I want you to make up your own mind, and I do have different points of view. But I went to what I call, it's called the U.S. National Debt Clock. I have a link near the top of this page under the photographs. And if you click on it, it's an interesting chart to see. And it's constantly, for example, right now I'm looking at the U.S. national debt. It's in the left-hand corner. It's over $23 trillion, and the numbers are just flying by. And within a year, it'll be at $24 trillion, maybe more. But it also gives you a lot of information. Some of it is, I want to say, real time. You see the numbers going up, and that should scare you. Others don't go up as much. They're somewhat static. But if you look at just the national debt, that's only part of the problem, because the United States has more and more baby boomers, and I'm a baby boomer, and those were people born between the years 1946 and 1964. Well, maybe about half of them have retired. The other half are still working. And when they usually hit either the early 60s or mid-60s, sometime in the 60s, they will retire. And more baby boomers are retiring. You can do the math. That's 60 years to 1964. So in roughly, I think it's 2024, the baby boom generation, the youngest ones, will be hitting 60. And then if you add another 6 years, in 2030, most of them will be retired. Not all of them. Some will still be working in the 2030s. So you have more and more and more baby boom generation people. The estimate is about 10,000 a day qualify for Social Security and begin to receive it, usually at 66 or 67. Now, I fully anticipate that the government will, and I hope sooner rather than later, what they're going to do, they have to do it, to reform entitlements, are going to increase that retirement age. And by increasing the retirement age, they are cutting benefits to age 70. Now, I think if you're in the baby boom generation, either collecting your Social Security benefits and eligible for Medicare, you might be getting Medicare benefits as well, paying for doctor and hospital care. And today, we still have a few days. If you haven't gotten your Medicare supplement or Medicare Advantage, you have to the 7th. Really, you need to buy it this week. And I'm in the shopping mode. But if you qualify for Medicare, it doesn't cover everything. That's why you need to sign up. And there are not, it's a hot market right now. If you watch any TV, literally every commercial break, you have one or more advertising for buy my Medicare supplement or Medicare Advantage. Now, this show is not about that. But the point I'm trying to make is the financial situation we're in is a mess. It did not happen overnight. This has taken at least 90, if not 100 years to get us in this mess. There's no easy way to solve the problem. Either you cut benefits, which I think you're going to see some of that, or dramatically increase taxes, payroll taxes, for those that are still working. Neither of those are popular, but that needs to be done. And the more we wait, the downsizing or the increase in taxes, one of the two. Either your benefits are going to have to dramatically get cut. How much? About 20%. And the payroll taxes also have to go up. And the politicians do not want to tell you that. This is the subject that's a taboo. It's an understanding. We're not going to talk about that. And what are the Democrats doing? They want to increase entitlements. It's like they are totally irresponsible. And I shake my head. Now, some people fall for this. Tax the rich. That's how we're going to take all the rich's money. Well, that doesn't work, folks. First of all, the rich are already overtaxed. The problem is the government is spending too much money, and neither political party is doing anything about it. Now, I've been saying this for years. Ever since I've started, I would say at least once a month, sometimes once a week, depending on what the news stories are, I would get on this. But my voice is, it's like being in a forest and a tree falls, nobody hears it. Well, oh yeah, I'm broadcasting over the internet. And yes, I post my podcast of the show, but it's not commercial radio. At some point, I'm going to switch to commercial radio and be hopefully nationally syndicated, and that should spread the message. And I'm not the only one that's saying this. There are many people that have been saying this for many years. But our Congress is literally unable. It doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican, whoever controls. They're all big spenders. Now, I say all. Okay, there's some. There's a few people that are truly believe in fiscal responsibility. In other words, balanced budgets. But there's so few of them, they can't do anything. And it doesn't matter, like I said, whether the Democrats or the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency. I've given up on both political parties. They're hopeless. They're bought and paid for. Now, let me say this. Yeah, they're bought and paid for through campaign contributions. And they mainly listen to the people that make the biggest campaign contributions. Actually, they sell out rather cheap. So if you keep voting Democrat or Republican, it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't matter because you're going to get the same result. The big difference between the two parties is what they want to spend the money on. Now, I believe the main responsibility of the federal government is national defense and defending the country. And I'm for a strong military, but we've passed that many, many years ago. And the reason is we have an armed forces that's really an imperial type army because it's intervening in country after country. And it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican president. We have very much an interventionist foreign policy. Probably the biggest advocates of that are the neocons, the neoconservatives. I don't consider them new and I don't consider them conservative. They come out of the Democratic Party. They're largely progressives, big government spending, but they want to spend it on national defense. And there isn't a war or country that they don't want to intervene on, and it hasn't worked out. We've wasted a lot of money in those interventions and cost a lot of lives. And many people have been seriously wounded and will remain seriously wounded, although they'll get the care. But if you lose your arm, your legs, however, whatever the wound is, and many, many of them are committing suicide every single day. So wars are expensive in terms of lives and its impact on our armed forces, as well as in treasurer money. And until we have a new political party that will downsize the federal government, close federal departments, I don't see us avoiding what I call a day of reckoning. And that's when it hits the fan. And you're seeing a little bit of it, but not, depends how you want to interpret it. What's the Federal Reserve been doing? Oh, it's been printing money, creating money. That's a better way to say it. They've been making loans to mainly banks that need liquidity. So what they'll do, it's called repurchase market. Most of that until recently was short term, and most of it was one day or overnight. They would loan to you, you put up securities, usually treasury securities, but it could be mortgage-backed securities, and they would loan you money at a very low rate. And they've been doing a lot of that. They started in September, it's continuing, and now what they've added is a 42-day repo. In other words, they'll loan you the money for 6 weeks. Now, obviously, that will have a slightly higher interest rate than an overnight loan, and you have to put up securities, and when repo stands for repurchase, when they pay the loan, they get the securities back. It's not hard to understand, but some people try to make it difficult. And a lot of people are asking, well, is this quantitative easing? Well, in effect, it is, because it is impacting the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. What they're doing is providing liquidity or money to financial institutions that need the cash for whatever reason because their customers need the cash. Keep that in mind. Now, why this is going on, what have many of the big lie media trying to do? Scare you that the economy is going into recession. Well, it's not. It's growing. So don't panic. My only concern is it's not growing at 3%. 3% in my mind is the minimum acceptable rate of growth in the sense that if you look at the trend line of growth over long periods like decades, the average rate of growth of the U.S. economy is typically between 3 and 3.5%. And that's really depends on when you start and when you end. So it's somewhat sensitive to your starting and ending point, how many decades you're looking cooking, obviously. But a good rule of thumb is you want the U.S. economy to at least grow at 3%, ideally between 3 and 3.5%. Now, obviously, if it can grow more than that, terrific. But we're not there, folks. The economy has more or less been growing about, I call it, two-thirds speed. Well, two-thirds of that is about 2%, and that's more or less where it's at. It is not booming. I know Donald Trump likes to say we're in a booming economy. Well, we might have a booming stock market, but we're not in a booming economy. In my mind, booming means at least 4 and above 4%, really, and 5, 6%. We're not anywhere close to that. As a matter of fact, we're about half what a truly booming economy would look like. And it's not just one quarter, folks. It's quarter after quarter after quarter. I always say you need to look at the trend, not one quarter or one month statistics. So until we elect or stand up a political party, I don't see any leadership coming from Congress from either the Democrat or the Republican parties, and certainly not for Donald Trump. He's more or less taken entitlements completely off the table. So I'm not optimistic there. He needs to do it because if he truly wants to get growth rates of 4, 5, 6%, this problem is the number one economic problem in my mind that needs to be addressed, and neither political party is doing it. They're not even articulating the urgency of it. And it is an urgent problem because it's not getting any better. We keep running. Now deficits are going right back up. Deficits is where the government spends more money than it collects in total from all the taxes that they collect. In other words, we're spending more money than our tax income from a government point of view. And it's usually somewhere in the neighborhood of, in the past 20 years, between roughly 500 and 1,000 billion. But it's been above that. And I think we're going right back above that. And that's what happened in the early years of the Obama administration. And he inherited that from George Bush. And that's when we're running 1,400, 1,300. 300, 1,299, year after year after year, we were really piling it on. Well, we're going right back to that situation. We haven't learned our lesson, and debt keeps piling up, especially, and it's not only at the federal level, it's also at the state level, and I will say also at the individual level. So we have a big debt problem. And the only way to truly solve it is have economic policies, especially tax policies and spending or budgetary policies, that downsize the federal government. We don't have that. Neither party is even talking about that. And that's only a starter. Where is the big money? Well, go back to that chart. There's a link. U.S. national debt. Go look at it and look at the big items. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, defense spending, and interest on the national debt. It's not it's in the left-hand corner, but it's under that first box. And you see what I'm talking about. Those are big, the first two, and those are into the entitlements. Social Security, slightly less, a couple of hundred billion less than Medicare and Medicaid. And we, in terms of interest, this somewhat surprised me because I really hadn't looked at it for a while. We pay interest, when I say we, the United States Treasury pays over $1 billion of interest a day. And you see that in the fourth big item is interest on the debt, $375 billion. That's over $1 billion a day. So this U.S. debt clock is very handy because it is dynamic, it is changing, and it's not for the best. It is really, you see the tax revenues and then you see government spending, and there's a big deficit. We have not learned our lesson. Actually, we're just making it worse. There's no leadership in either the Democrat or Republican Party. So if you continue that bad habits that people get in voting for, usually people vote the party their parents voted for. Now, I never was in that situation because I looked at people as individuals that were running. And if they shared my classical liberal philosophy, in other words, for limited government, a representative republic under a constitution with checks and balances. And we haven't had that, you know, for over 100 years. And it's actually getting worse and worse. There's no concern today, and no one really talks about it, as what are we going to do about the deficits? Well, nothing. We're just going to borrow some more money. And that's exactly what they do. And that means as you borrow more money, you're piling the debt on and on and on. See, a deficit is a budgetary deficit for a fiscal year, where the fiscal year runs 1 October through 30 September. And we are now in fiscal year 2020, which will end 30 September of next year. And we'll probably run a deficit. In other words, we'll spend more than $1 trillion more than we collect in taxes. Could be a little worse. I don't think it's going to be any better, though. And yes, I still think Donald Trump's going to win. And like I said, Donald Trump is off to NATO. I still hope he continues the pressure, though, to get many of those nations that still are not spending at least 2% of their total output, their gross domestic product, on defense. And frankly, I think the people that, the nations that have not been doing that, should have to catch up. So while Trump has definitely kept his promise and has gotten more money contributed by the European nations, we're still by far, there are a few nations that are meeting that 2%. I think we're over 3%. I don't know our exact number. I know it's over 3%. As President Trump likes to say, we're the suckers. Because if he didn't try to twist some arms, the European countries were fine with the way it was. You have to get their attention. And you got to continually pressure them. Otherwise, they're not going to do anything. And they're not. Our spending is out of control at the government level, not just the federal level, but also at the state level. Keep that in mind. And they have debt problems just like the federal government has debt problems. And neither party is really doing anything about it or even proposing to do anything about it. The Democratic Party, in my mind, is a lost cause. They want to make the situation many orders of magnitude greater. They want more entitlement programs, and they want socialism. And they want to take away your health insurance that you get through your employer. That alone makes them very unpopular. So I don't think any Democrat is going to win. And that also includes Mike Bloomberg. He has some problems, and they'll come out. He has a lot of money, and he can spend it in advertising, but first he has to get the Democratic Party nomination. And I simply do not see how he can do that, because the socialists, the Reds, the radical extremist Democrat socialists, are not going to let him have it. Oh, he'll get anywhere from 1 to 5% of the vote. I'm not saying the ads won't have some impact, but his strategy has been tried in the past, where you don't compete in the earlier primaries. But most of the people that have tried it have lost. There have been very few people. Matter of fact, I'd really have to think, has anyone pulled that off? I was going to say Nixon, but I'm not sure. So yes, the national debt and the deficit are getting worse, worse, and worse. And always keep in mind, because especially commentators, with few exceptions, will mention the fact that the national debt is just the tip of the iceberg. And the reason why I mention that, you have what's called unfunded obligations. The biggies are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. In other words, it's unfunded in the sense that the government never invested the money, never had the money to invest. So when people, like in the baby boom generation, retire and they don't have the money, what do? They borrow. That's why we're going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. Now, one of the games that some economists do, and even on occasion I've been guilty of it, they like to minimize that by comparing it to as a percentage of what? GDP. That seems to make it more acceptable. As long as it's 3% or less, now it's, as long as it's 4% or between 3 and 4%, that's manageable. No, not really. Because there's an interesting chart, and I have it. I pulled that up. I'm looking. I somehow switched away from the chart. It shows over time, and I mean before World War II, and the worst was during World War II. We really rent you. Way most nations, including the United States, assuming they win the war that they're getting into, they go into debt, and that's exactly what the United States did. But what did it do that it's not doing now? Oh, it paid it back. And that's key. You have to pay that back. And we simply don't have that discipline anymore. We're actually piling on more and more debt. And what you're seeing is the percentage, I believe it's over 100% now. And we're approaching World War II levels. So it's getting scarier. Is anyone talking about it? Well, the Democratic candidates are certainly not going to talk about it. Doesn't make them look very, very good. It's the very, very first chart, national debt as a fraction of GDP. Yeah, part of that chart is obviously a projection. We're not exceeding World War II levels. but we will be sometime in the 2030s for sure. If this continues and nothing fundamental is done about it, our debt load will be higher, more than 100%, as it was in World War II. See, if you look at the chart during World War II, it spiked up and then spiked down, and gradually, as a percent of GDP, went down, down, and down into the, most of the time, in the 20s and 30s percent. Now it's approaching 100% again. That's the problem. And you can see what the projected number is, and I have that chart there. And this is why I'm somewhat upset about this. This is burdening future generations. It's certainly burdening people that are alive today. Assuming they live to their life expectancy, they're going to have to pay a lot of interest. A lot of interest. We're already paying $1 billion a day. That's a lot of money, folks. And it's only going to get worse. And remember, interest rates are at very low interest rates. If we get back to, quote, normal situation, where ideally the Fed is not manipulating, trying to keep interest rates low. In other words, if we get interest rates like on the federal funds rate between 3 and 5%, well, what's going to happen? Instead of spending $1 billion a day, we'll be spending $2 to $3 billion a day. And what that means, that will squeeze out other spending. And that's the point I always make. We should be, right now, cutting and closing permanently federal departments. No one is proposing that. Oh, yeah, there might be a senator or representative that wants to close, let's say, the Department of Energy or Department of Education or one or two of the departments, but you should be closing 8. And the reason I say that, the private sector is perfectly capable of producing the goods and services that are the main focus of these departments. We don't need the federal departments. In my mind, we need deregulation, massive deregulation. Now, Trump is starting that. But if you do away with and close permanently departments, that's the first thing you need to do. To show the American people we're serious. We have a terrible financial situation. It's a mess. I describe it as a financial mess, and we need to address it. But that's not where the huge money is. The huge money are in those programs. You go to the U.S. national debt, and that second box on the left-hand side, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the national defense, and interest. Those are the big four categories. I forgot one, the welfare or income security. Those are the big four or five. Now, I'm for a strong defense, so I'm not a big advocate of dramatic cuts, but it can be cut of the defense budget. But there are hawks in the Congress, Democrats and Republicans, that want to spend a lot of money on national defense, more than we need to. But we need to examine every single department and to ask the hard question, do we really need this entire department? Now, what you're going to find is every single department has probably, hopefully, at least one program that a majority of the American people might support. Maybe. I'm being very optimistic here. But you still need to close the department. That's the hard thing to do. But we need to do it. Otherwise, you're never going to get back to the trend line of 3 and 3.5%. And we're certainly not going to get back to a booming economy. To make it very simple, the federal government is taking too many resources out of the economy. Who needs those resources? The private sector, industry, the producers, the manufacturers of goods and services. And they are acutely aware of this national debt and the massive deficits. And they rightly assume, first of all, it introduces uncertainty. Business people do not like, no one really likes uncertainty. And it's the uncertainty of regime change. Who's going to be in charge? Is it these crazy Democrats? I call them the Reds, the radical extremist Democrat socialists. If they're in charge, we're in trouble. They'll bankrupt this country faster than you. We won't get to 2030. We're lucky if we get to 2023. Hopefully, they will not be elected. And I include that Bloomberg. He's a problem. He's an elitist. And the American people do not want another elitist. They don't want someone that thinks he's better than the people and knows best for them. The American people don't want any part of that. And when you look at Mike Bloomberg one-on-one, that's what he's about. It'll come out. You'll see him say it. So I don't think Mike Bloomberg is the answer. I don't think anyone in the Democratic Party is the answer. And let's be fair here. Donald Trump is not fundamentally addressing our continually growing budgetary deficits. He's actually made it worse with a tax cut. Now, let me make clear, I'm for a tax cut. But I think when you have a tax cut, especially a big one that Donald Trump had, it should be matched with a big cut in government spending. And that didn't happen, folks. That did not happen. And that's the problem with the big government parties. Now, I know he can point the finger at the Democrats. He could say, well, they're not going to cut spending. He's absolutely right. They want to increase it. They want to increase dramatically government spending and increase your taxes. Not only the rates, but the burden of taxes on you. The American people don't support that. But that's what they're running on. When you cut through all the BS, they're what I call Santa Claus socialists. Vote for me and I give you some free stuff. Free health care, free education, you name it. The Democrats, you can find a Democrat and I'll give it to you. A free phone, an Obama phone. They're what I call moochers. And the moochers today make up at least 25% of the voter base. Keep that in mind. There are people that are moochers. And they like all that free stuff and they fall for it when they don't realize it hurts them in the sense that you got to pay for the free stuff. There's no free lunch, as Milton Friedman said many, many times. Well, free stuff is not free. You end up paying for it and really a lot more. So spending is out of control. The Fed is pumping in money. Loaning money, either overnight money or I call it six week or 42-day money. And as security, they're collateralized loans. In other words, for either a day or 6 weeks, the Fed will loan you money. Now, what's happening? If a bank needs money, it probably needs it more than a day. So every day it's going back for a one-day overnight loan. And one reason the Fed does it, they like to keep the Fed target rate, the interest rates, especially in the repo market, very close to what that federal funds rate is. The range now is 1.5% to 1.75%. In other words, 150 basis points to 175 basis points. Now, every day, the effective rate is usually somewhere in the middle. But that changes minute by minute. The number I saw, it was about 1.56, so it's slightly higher than the low end. But they're trying, the Federal Open Market Committee, the trading desk, is trying to keep that federal funds rate between that number. Now, yes, Donald Trump would like to make it lower. And if you've listened to his economic speech, which I played several shows ago, he would even follow Europe into negative territory. I think that's a bad idea. But he's an inflationist. He's an easy monetary policy person. And the reason is he thinks the only way the economy is going to grow is if the Fed has a loose or easy monetary policy. And that means lowering that federal funds target rate by another 0.25%. Now, if you listen to Chairman Jerome Powell, he said they'll keep it for now where it is. And that makes sense to me. Now, obviously, if it looks like, let's say we had a bad shopping, the consumers weren't spending their money. That's what I'm trying to say. If that were the case, and we'll see it in retail sales, so we'll know shortly. Remember, now's the time where people shopping for Christmas, buying gifts. Most of them, I'm not saying they've done all their Christmas shopping. They have. Think of it, there's only 23 days left to before we hit Christmas. So you better do your shopping, better at least buy a Christmas card and get ready to send it. But what I'm hearing is people were shopping. Shop till you drop, keep the economy chugging along, and that's good news. In other words, the consumers have confidence in the President Trump's economic policies and believe it will extend at least another year. That's why I don't think the U.S. economy in 2020 is going to go into a recession. But you have many people in big lie media that want to tell you it's going to do it. It's going to do it. Well, I don't think their crystal ball is any better than other people's. And yeah, but it could, let me say, I'm the first one to say it could do it. I'm not saying it's out of the question. I just don't see it. The earliest I can see a recession is in 2021. And that's the good news. Now, if the United States and China do come to some trade agreement, now I'm very pessimistic. What they've done is broken it up into part one, part two, and it looks like they might have an agreement on part one. The biggest problem with the trade agreement is you have to enforce it, which means you have to have terms that really work. And I don't think the Chinese, the communist Chinese, will agree to any terms that truly will work. In other words, they'll continue to cheat as they've been doing for over 20 years. However, if at least part one is completed, that would definitely give momentum to the U.S. economy. So it's really stay tuned. If you think about it, the American people have very little visibility into these trade negotiations, especially between communist China and the United States. Think about it. Do you know the details? I don't know the details. And we won't until they're wrapped up. And that looks like it'll take... I don't think the communists are even going to be serious until after the elections next year. Because they think they can get a better deal, better terms, if the Democrats win. Now, I think they can read the tea leaves, too. I don't think the Democratic Party is going to win. But I can be wrong. Remember, I thought Donald Trump was going to win last time. I thought it was going to be a very, very close race. And I was right. Lucky me. But does that mean I'm going to be right two elections in a row? Maybe not. It all depends who the Democrats nominate and what their economic policies are. And most of them, not all of them, but most of them are definitely their political philosophy is a radical, extremist, Democrat, socialist policy. They want the federal government controlling industry. If they had their druthers, they'd nationalize it. Now, no one's recommending that, but they want to control industry. They want to regulate it and control it. And to do that, they also want to increase taxes, because why do they want to increase taxes? They have to, because they're offering you free stuff. Free stuff costs money, which means they're going to increase the tax rates, and that will, the combination of more and more government spending, more new entitlements, and higher taxes will put the United States economy in a recession. That's why I say we need to replace Democrats and Republicans. I'd throw them all out, start again. But I have not seen anyone attempting standing up a new political party. That is the only thing that I think could save the United States, and there's nothing I can see. Can it happen, and can it happen quickly? Yes, it can. Look at the Brexit Party in the United Kingdom. I think they got over 30% of the vote. So yeah, you can have a new party that could knock out one of the parties, and I think the party that would be knocked out is the Democratic Party. I think they're the weakest. Now, they have one, actually several big advantages, and the biggest advantage is big lie media is spreading their propaganda. And they're very much against Trump and the Republican Party. So initially, the only hope is the Republicans gain control of the House, the Senate, and keep the presidency. But will they address the pressing economic problems? I don't see it. That's why until the American people change their habits and have another alternative, whatever you want to call the party, the American Independence Party is fine with me. I'm not hung up on a name. The key point is it's a party that wants to balance the budget, eliminate federal departments, 8 to 10, and yes, reform, fundamental reform of the tax system as well as entitlements. Is there anyone or any party that's doing that? Ladies and gentlemen, there isn't. They're not out there. I've been looking. But I've also been saying once the independents are 50% or more registered voters, at that point, a new party will emerge. But it's not going to happen in 2020, and I don't see it happening in 2024. I think the earliest is maybe 2028, and I think that could be too late, because the day of reckoning, in my mind, is going to happen in the next 10 to 15 years, and I think it's going to be sooner, not later. Looking at the clock, I'm at the hour point. I've talked about the Fed. I'm definitely going to come back to that. I think they're engaged in, the new chairman doesn't want to call it quantitative easing, but that's what's happening. I think the next step is they're going to be buying or have loans for a long period of time. In other words, they're going to be buying initially treasury securities, because the companies will, the banks will need the money because their customers need the money. So what do? They create money. So I have a lot more to say in the future about that. I have some articles you can read. Now, one other thing. I'm alerting you that the Department of Justice Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, he's been writing this report and getting it, making sure that the intelligence agencies, part of the intelligence community, none of the information is classified. He's trying to get it released to the public, and by the 9th. which is next Monday. And then on the 11th, he's supposed to testify in front of the House Judiciary Committee. And that's going to be, and I'll cover that for sure. I don't know what's in that report. I don't have any sources in the government leaking to me. I'm just like you. I go online and have to dig the news out. What the inspector general does, if you're in the report, they want to hear your side or give you the opportunity to answer what the report is saying. Some of these people, I think, have criminal liability. But even if they do, that doesn't mean the Department of Justice is going to indict them or prosecute them. And remember, they're interviewing people that are still in or at the Department of Justice and the FBI. Now, if people have left, they don't have to talk to the inspector general. You know, if you don't no longer work at the FBI or the Department of Justice, let's say you're retired or you were fired or you're quit, you don't really have to give them the time of day. Now, they might come out and talk to you and say, well, here's what we have. We'd like to hear your side. It's very much a, I want to say a boys club, but it's, they don't. And here's the problem. I have lost total confidence in the FBI and the Department of Justice. I don't trust them. I don't trust Congress, and I don't trust the FBI or the Department of Justice. Why? They turn the intelligence community against the American people when they surveil Donald Trump and the people in his campaign. And until they clean house and make examples, I think there are 2, 3, 4 dozen people that have various degrees of criminal liability. Will they prosecute all of them? Most likely not. But we haven't had not one single person in those two departments face criminal charges. So it's really, this is at best an early indication, are they really serious about cleaning house? Because supposedly the IG can make criminal referrals. Does that mean they will? No. They might have people that, yeah, they'll say, yeah, probably broke the law, but we're not going to recommend that. And that goes on. It is really the U.S. attorney, John Durham, in Connecticut, my understanding, he's called a grand jury, and he's investigating. Means he's found some clear-cut cases of crimes with evidence. So that tells me at least one or more people will be indicted. But I think we're anywhere from 6 months to maybe a year away before that happens. I think it will happen in 2020. Why? Well, the statute of limitations is running. Most of these crimes that we're talking about, I call it the Clinton-Obama Democrat criminal conspiracy, happened in either late 2015, but most of them were in 2016. And you can do the math. 5 years means in either late 2020 or sometime in 2021, the statute of limitations is running right now and it can end. So they have, if the Trump administration is going to indict and prosecute those people in the intelligence community, and I'm talking the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Central Intelligence Agency, the White House, and others, it has to start moving out. Have you heard any indictments? No, certainly no prosecutions. And I think there are 2, 3, maybe as many as 5 dozen people that might have some criminal liability. Do I think? I have no idea how many people they're going to go after. But they need to clean house. They totally, in my mind, lack credibility. I don't trust them. I simply do not trust the FBI or Department of Justice anymore. They've lost not only my confidence, but millions of people of saying, wait a minute, they get to break the law and really rig elections in the sense of giving Hillary Clinton a pass on many, many crimes? Ladies and gentlemen, that's corruption. That's what some people call dirty cops, dirty FBI, and dirty Department of Justice attorneys. And it goes right back to the Oval Office and President Obama. Goes right into the Oval Office. The buck stops there. He authorized it. He knew it. And you had people in all these departments said, yes, sir, and executed it, even though many of them were lawyers and knew what they were doing was criminal. You do not use the federal government, its assets and people to spy, invade the privacy of the American people. And that's exactly what President Obama did. And they really had no, and I mean no, legitimate evidence that Donald Trump in any way was involved in a criminal conspiracy and his people with the Russians or Putin. That is a big lie, smear campaign by the media. The media have a lot to answer for. So that's coming up in a week. Now, one other thing, and I wasn't even going to cover this. Donald Trump, well, should I play it? I was not happy when President Trump did this. He's playing to the crowd. Let me remind you what Donald Trump said at one of these rallies. Let's listen in. It's only a little over a minute.
Months earlier, Peter Strzok. Remember, he and his lover, Lisa Page. What a group. She's going to win. 10 million to 1, she's going to win. I'm telling you, Peter, she's going to win. Peter, oh, I love you so much. I love you, Peter. I love you too, Lisa. Lisa, I love you. Lisa. Lisa. Oh, God, I love you, Lisa. And if she doesn't win, Lisa, we've got an insurance policy, Lisa. We'll get that son of a bitch out. We got an insurance policy. And we're living through the insurance policy. That's what it is. The phony Russia hoax. Lisa, I love you. Now, the do-nothing Democrat con artists and scammers are getting desperate. 13 months, I gotta move fast, because they're not beating us at the polls, and they know it, despite the phony polls that you see all the time. They're phony polls. You know, polls are no different. Remember, I always used to talk about polls? I know polls very well. Polls are no different than crooked writers. They're crooked polls. They're crooked polls. No different.
Now, he has a point there. Polls are used by big lie media to shape public opinion, and you got to be conscious of that. And that's the majority of the time. Now, there are some organizations that try to be fair, balanced, and I'm not talking Fox, and call it the way the results come in, but many times they're looking for a specific result, and they're trying to move public opinion. What drives big lie media bonkers is they have been totally unsuccessful in separating Donald Trump's supporters from Donald Trump. And I maintain he's getting more supporters because the majority of the American people do not support impeachment. That's a bum rap. It's unfair, it's crooked, and it's disgraceful, is my point of view. They never should have gone there. They went there. They went there, and they deserve what they get next November. And I think the American people would push back. They do not support the impeachment or the overturning of an election. Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, won fair and square. And he's going to win fair and square again, and I think by a much bigger margin, probably get upwards of 70 million votes and, oh, maybe about 330 electoral college votes. But election is a long way away, and a lot of things can change. So Lisa Page complains about that part of the speech. She's a victim of Trump. Nah. I think she's trying to get out ahead of the Inspector General report, and like I said, I have no inside track. I think she has been briefed by the Inspector General, and they wanted to hear her side and knows that they're not going to recommend prosecution. So now she's come out of hiding. She's not going to get any sympathy from me or the people that follow this. They weren't doing their jobs, very frankly. And Mueller had to fire both of them from the Mueller investigation because they're biased. But really, if you fired all the people that were biased in the Mueller investigation, you have to fire everybody. And Mueller didn't do that. They got caught texting, and there's evidence. And that might come back to bite them, because I don't think the FBI has given us all. They have copies of it, or most of it. So we'll see again when the prosecutor starts to indict people, whether or not and who in the FBI. I think the director, deputy director, Peter Strzok, her lover, maybe her, depends what they did. It depends what they did. And that's the situation with all of them. Now, I've already alerted to you, what are they going to do and what are they going to say? I was just following orders. President authorized the surveillance of Donald Trump and his campaign, and we went to the FISA court and got the warrant. They don't tell you that they misled the court. They didn't tell the court it was paid for opposition research, paid for by who? The Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. And the information was from someone that had an animus, really hated Donald Trump. And more importantly, the FBI could not in any way verify it. And that's a requirement. It says right at the top of the application that the information in this application has been verified by the FBI. Well, it wasn't. And that's what James Comey said. There was no way we could verify any of this. Christopher Steele, the author or the gatherer of these rumors from the Russians, he said it was raw intelligence and there's no way I could verify any of it. It was garbage, folks. It was fabricated disinformation. And I think some people in the FBI for a while believed the Christopher Steele dossier, but eventually came to the conclusion there's nothing here. But that didn't stop them from misleading the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, and they not only submitted one application, they renewed it three times. And for the people that signed off on that in the Department of Justice and the FBI, I believe a criminal act. Now, some will say, well, it's a gray area. And that's probably what they'll say. Well, it's a gray area. They were deliberately misleading the court. And they were. They were. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned. There's a lot more information that will come out in the next year. And hopefully the mess, both the financial mess the United States is in, as well as the mess in the FBI, the Department of Justice, and several organizations in the intelligence community, especially the CIA, will eventually be cleaned up when they prosecute those that truly did commit criminal acts by spying on the American people. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.